This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Bill Samuels, Jr. Growing up on Distillers Row in Bardstown, Kentucky, son of Maker's Mark founder Bill Samuels, Sr. and godson of Jim Beam, Bill Samuels, Jr. has been an eyewitness to many milestones in bourbon history and has made history himself. As the current chairman emeritus of Maker's Mark, Bill ran his family's company for 35 years as president and CEO. Under his watchful eye, he followed his father's stern but simple piece of advice for him, don't screw up the whiskey, which is the advice he passed on to his son, Rob Samuels, Maker's current COO. Before passing on the torch in 2011, Bill left quite a legacy, which included the introduction of Maker's first new expression, Maker's 46, the brand's beloved ambassador program, and more. Bill's current role is perfectly suited for the very first Maker's Mark ambassador. Travel around the world, introduce Maker's Mark and Maker's 46 to folks, and share a story or two about all of the incredible history he's been an eyewitness to. Well, I would say that that would also make Bill a perfect guest for the On Brand podcast, since it's that history that I would love to learn more about. Bill, welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm not sure the discussion is going to be at the level that you've described it, but we'll give it a try.
Well, I think that's about all we can do. The only thing that pains me is as we record this at 9 a.m. Central Time, and a little later than that Eastern Time, is that we can't enjoy a Maker's ourself as we record this, but we can just pretend that that coffee is something else.
Oh, we do it often, and it's not adequate, but that's all we got.
So, you know, we always talk about brands having stories, and I think that's true for many brands. I would think especially one like Maker's Mark, and we pass down those stories like family stories. But you have kind of a unique, kind of blended perspective on that, because that is your family's story. What was it like growing up with this sort of a very different type of family member?
Well, this thing that got Dad interested in going back and seeing if before he died he could do something that his previous six ancestors hadn't done, which was to create a bourbon that actually tasted good. It was a retirement hobby. And I never gave it a thought about possibly coming back, and was after 2 degrees in aerospace engineering and working on the Polaris missile, and while at Vanderbilt University, became a great friend with one of my father's great friends, Hap Motlow, who was the chairman of Jack Daniels, and was the great-nephew of Mr. Jack himself. And he made it perfectly clear that with his help, the two of us could convince Dad when I graduated from law school that he would agree to work with me. We would become partners in trying to commercialize this wonderful hobby of his, under the condition that we would never compromise the quality of the spirit for the sake of profit. And I made a one-year commitment, and that was 50-some years ago. It was it was the most fun I ever had, and I owe this all to the founding family of Jack Daniels.
Well, that is a great intersection of some stories there as well. And in thinking about commercializing that hobby, hobbies, you know, it's that very phrase of commercializing a hobby to many that have hobbies, that love their hobbies, it can be a scary proposition, because often that's where you end up killing what brings you so much joy.
And you are 100% right. And that was exactly the perspective my father had. And we hired an advertising agency not to do advertising, but to help me figure out a way to go forward in a way that would make him comfortable. And it took us almost 3 years.
Well, and that's exactly where I wanted to go and explore a little further, because I'm sure, you know, not compromising the spirit, I'm sure there's all sorts of other manufacturing, operational, business implications of that. But when it comes to building a brand, and the Maker's brand is so distinct, but that too, in literally packaging up that hobby and making it into something that so many people connect with, where did you start with that?
Well, where we started is exactly what I left off. We had to get to the point that Dad was comfortable with us doing any offense at all, because his idea of brand building was sit on a rock and wait for the mountain to come to Muhammad. And he figured if his mousetrap was as good as he thought it was, that eventually folks would come. And the convincing part on our side was that in the 1960s and 70s, nobody was interested in a better tasting bourbon. It was a little like Brussels sprouts. Once you decided you don't like Brussels sprouts, you don't give a damn about a new one. And so once we got him to that point, then we had him engaged. And where we ended up with was pretty much doing it his way, since he had the checkbook. And we got one concession. We had identified his idea of going to market was never trying to sell something to somebody they didn't want to buy, and adopted the idea that discovery would have to be the foundation for anything that we did. That people had to learn about what he had created at the distillery from a friend, not from us. And the concession that we got out of him was, well, okay, we will adopt the discovery model as we understand it if he will give us permission to manage the discovery process so long as there are no fingerprints and so long as we do no compromising with the product itself. And believe it or not, that took 4 years to get to that point, and would not have been possible without the help of the marketing people within the advertising agency, because I'm not a marketer. I'm an attorney and an engineer.
So in drawing that out, a discovery process is kind of a heady pursuit. How did you manage that or make that something that you could scale like you need to with traditional advertising?
The big challenge was, how do you make it actionable?
Yeah.
Discovery is really about sitting down and waiting. And that had to be a huge part of it. So the action plan, generally, in a conceptual sense, was we will spend all our time polishing the apple. We will not chase after a targeted audience unless we were to define the audience as, and this was the one agreement that we got from him with regard to targeting, was this was after a lot of tries, that he would agree that our targeted audience were individuals who had a way above average interest in taste distinctiveness, whom we would enjoy having home for dinner.
Huh.
That was the definition that we had. Well, of course, that's totally unactionable from a marketing standpoint, but it was a good exercise because every time we extracted what was in his heart, we came away with new guideposts and new learning that, as we're now in the third generation, are as rich as they were when we were doing the extracting back in the 1960s.
Well, I love that you got guideposts, because I think that sometimes as brands, it's easy to, you know, we're looking for specificity and we're looking for these very predictive touch points. We need this, we need that. And oftentimes, that's how you end up doing what everyone else is doing. But these guideposts you were able to extract, I think, took you in a very different direction that is kind of part of that end result, this kind of legendary brand status that you've kind of ended up with, or exclusivity. Or
it made the transition generationally from father to son possible. And it really, it was that discipline, because a lot of the things that were intuitively important to him are more important to me because of intellectual learning. And I guess what I'm saying is I think the Maker's Mark customer is blessed with the fact that I did not invent Maker's Mark. It was my mother and father.
That's interesting, but important too, because it wasn't maybe your baby in the same way.
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
so we got the concession that we could polish the apple. All right. Now, what's that mean? Well, that meant that we could work with my mother to restore the old distillery and see if we could create bourbon tourism, which did not exist at the time. And of course, now in 2017, we have the wonderful Bourbon Trail.
Yes.
With all our distilleries, and with over 1 million visitors to the Bourbon Trail last year from people that do not live in Kentucky. But back in the 60s, 70s, and really up into the early 80s, 100% of our customers were in Kentucky. Therefore, 100% of the people that really had a special feeling for a special bourbon were in Kentucky. And outside of Kentucky, there was really no concept such as premium bourbon or thinking about bourbon and connoisseurship being talked about in the same sentence. And that's really what Mom and Dad did. And every distiller in Kentucky recognizes that and applauds them the same way I do. In fact, Mom was the first woman inducted into the Kentucky Bourbon Hall of Fame because she's the one that saved the old Victorian buildings and created bourbon tourism and designed and named the Maker's Mark bottle.
Well, let's talk about that bottle a little bit, because I do think that's something that is so distinctive. And for all of the, you know, the very particular kind of guideposts in place on, you know, not advertising in the traditional sense, I think that bottle alone is one of your best ads.
Well, there's no denying that. And she got lucky a little bit too, because LED lighting did not exist when she created Maker's Mark. And there was no bourbon packaging that really was distinctive. We had come out of the war as an industry, and the glass company mandated that we all use stock bottles like the beer companies were. And she didn't know that that's the way it had to be. So she sat down and created her own idea of what the bottle ought to be, She was a chemist, so she played around with wax that's been used to seal cognacs and ports and sherries and wines for years and years and years, and decided that it could be more than just the functional use to keep oxygen out, but it could be part of the design package. And she added the pigment and added a plasticizer to get the drips. And then me being a patent attorney went and got it patented. And it was just the outline of the dripping is the second trademark of a design in the country. The first was the Coca-Cola bottle.
That's amazing. I feel like there's a you could almost have the beginning of a joke there of a chemist and a patent attorney walk into a bar and end up creating a bourbon.
She always got the last words in all of our discussions. So she wore the pants in the family. Dad was the craftsman, and I guess you could say I was the exploiter under great disciplined restraint.
I'd say you were a in the business of careful exploitation,
or I would just get disinherited. It was, you know, those are the alternatives.
Right. So in looking at that, you talked about inventing bourbon connoisseurs, and I would think that all of this, when you talk about kind of the roots in the discovery process and creating the bourbon connoisseur and talking about kind of one of your personal accomplishments, the ambassador program. Now,
I love that.
Yeah, and I reference this. I teach branding and marketing here at the University of Iowa. Mm-hmm. And I often reference that program, and it's funny because especially with MBAs, and I don't know what that says about MBA students, but I usually have at least one or two that is an actual member of the program. So,
oh, really?
Yes.
Well, that means it must be working. It's been the most fun that we've ever had.
So how did you, it's kind of like, again, so many things in your history are these things that often happen organically, like yeah. Fans. So how did you start to draw lines around that and formalize that in more of a an official way?
Here's how it happened. It was the mother of necessity. Up until mid-year 1980, our customers were all in Kentucky, and they were just super enthusiastic fans of the whiskey that Dad made at our little distillery. But that was it. And if you know anything about Kentucky, generally cool, stylish, fashionable things aren't invented in Kentucky. And so we were looking at being relegated forever to this Kentucky boundary, which it was good business, and Dad loved all the accolades he got from the locals in Kentucky, and do know an awful lot about bourbon. And then luck hit, and Dad thought the luck was great because a really credible source praised his hobby, and that was the Wall Street Journal. Ours was the first privately held company to end up being, I guess you could say, endorsed on that centerfold column on the front page. That was the moment Makers became a national brand, even though we didn't have any whiskey for anybody outside Kentucky. So my job was keep the plate spinning for 6 years while we wound up the distillery. And in the middle of that winding up the distillery, it hit me right in the face that everything we did with customers was personal. Everything was one-to-one. There was no mass marketing. There was none of the promotional stuff that traditional brands did. It was all touch and feel, and the distillery was a huge part of it. Of course, most Kentuckians could get to the distillery. And once it became a national historic landmark and the bourbon trail started, here comes the flood. But that wasn't going to work outside. And we didn't have a skill set as marketers to do anything about to touch and personalize the relationship with the people that were discovering Makers, primarily as a result of the Wall Street Journal article and the people who had seen the Wall Street Journal article and who had gone into the whiskey stores only to be frustrated because they couldn't find a bottle, which aggravated them all that much more and created that much more conversation. And it's the need to at least allow those outside Kentucky who were interested in what we were doing to hold their hand up, and maybe we could talk to each other. That's the essence of the ambassador program. It very deliberately is not a rewards program.
So for those that don't know, because it is a unique program, how does it work?
Oh, my God. I've been retired 6 years, and it's changed. It's basically those who would like to talk with us, just hold their hand up, sign up, and you get all the inside information. When special bottles come out, which are mainly commemorative bottles to raise money for charities in Kentucky, usually hospitals and other nonprofits, we have events around the country where my son or I will go. I wasn't very good at getting my father to put on his white Colonel Sanders suit to go with him. So it was just a way to engage for those that wanted to engage, and we would keep everybody up to date on happenings at the distillery and a lot of personal stuff within the family. And before we know it, we had 400,000 or 500,000 ambassadors, and it's been a lot of fun. And it really has given us a way to continue the personalization, the relation. And I'll tell you another one, just this is not something that you would enjoy talking about, but every once in a while you screw up. And the good thing about having ambassadors who are not bashful is they tell you when you screw up. And the year after I retired, my son decided the only way that, and I was with him, the only way that we could meet the demand and the commitments that we'd made would be to slightly reduce the proof. So being honest merchants, we sent an email to all of our ambassadors telling them what we were doing, and we were sure that they would immediately get back with us praising us for our openness and honesty. Instead, they got back to us and told us what stupid fools we were. And I'm talking about well over 200,000 emails within a period of a couple of hours. And if you talk about light bulbs going on, where it took Coke 9 months to figure out that they shouldn't have done what they did, it took us 2 days.
Wow.
And it was all because of the ambassadors. They just rebelled.
Wow.
Well, we immediately went back and apologized to them and apologize to the people that were going to get the extra whiskey, which was mainly the international markets. We had to delay that 2 or 3 years. And so that was the big learning curve. But that's how people that really respect what you do and want to be in on the know and are confident enough to let you know when you mess up. And they surely did.
Well, that is, again, like you said, it's not something that you want to talk about or have happen. But if you do, I'd say the 2 day learning curve beats the 9 months in the Coke scenario.
Well, absolutely. And Jay Leno helped. He beat on us 4 nights in a row.
Again, not things you want to have happen, but you'd rather learn about something quicker, I suppose.
Yes, sir.
Well, you talk about everything being personalized, everything being one-to-one, and I think that's what's always stood out to me about the ambassador program is, I've got students in the classroom there that have cards, personalized cards from Maker's Mark that they're ambassadors, that they can share that then with others, which I think is powerful. If you kind of like your kind of history of non-advertising, you turn all of these personal relationships into exactly what the name ambassador says, someone that's a goodwill ambassador on behalf of your brand.
And we like to have fun with it too. This is not about seriousness. as I'm sure you know, every year we have a silly little gift for all of our ambassadors around Christmas time. And they have become the talk of the industry, and we just have so much. We get so many pictures back from our ambassadors who have misused what we've sent them. And I won't go into that with great detail, but, you know, at least everybody's talking and everybody's having fun, and that's kind of the objective.
Well, absolutely. I think at the end of the day, that's what you want out of it.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up, is there – you do such a good job of both sending – having ambassadors out in the world, kind of the push-pull dynamic of having those ambassadors out there, but then also of creating some gravity that drives people to you with bourbon tourism. And
yes.
I mean, these are such out-of-the-box ideas, and I think that especially in this digital age where we're all plugged in and connected, I think sometimes when you can do a hard shift on that and connect with someone with real-world in-person experiences, with tours, with events, you can create an even deeper relationship.
Well, that's the plan. There's a lot of experts who say as you get larger and your customer base spreads, it becomes harder. But we've got more people talking with us and talking to us than we ever have, and they're all over the world now.
Well, and again, it does get harder to manage, but I think that's probably, you know, your success in that is probably found in some of those guideposts that
yeah.
you extracted years ago that, you know, made that growth, but careful growth, managed really well.
Well, I think you're right. And I will tell you that once a year we do a thorough review of those guideposts. And everybody, especially the new people in the company and with the agency, they get a big dose of the history and the culture from its beginning.
So what form does that big dose of history and culture take? Because I think with onboarding, that's so important. And yet I think everybody's so busy with HR and everything else that they forget about reminding folks why the brand's important.
What we did, the fellow at the advertising agency and I, when my father was still alive, we actually put to pen and paper the process that got him to agree to allow us to manage the discovery process for this brand and what the implications were, as if nothing had happened. And then we have a second part of the review, which is, okay, after we got this very general idea that marketing meant strictly polish the apple, don't chase people who aren't interested in what you're doing, let them come to you. It's a lot more fun. They're a lot more interested when you tell them something that they've asked about rather than just downloaded a bunch of junk on them. And we've actually put that into a formal presentation that my father signed off on before he died that accurately reflects how we got from being at far end of the spectrums, me wanting to commercialize and him wanting to be left alone, and how we met, not as a compromise, but how it ended up win-win. And the big win has been the state of Kentucky, just in the amount of investment and taxes and reputation that premium bourbon, and not just Maker's Mark, but all the premium bourbons now, and how it has helped position Kentucky as maybe something a little different than barefoot and ignorant.
Wow. Well, that is good. I love that definition of marketing, and it's one I think that many could learn from. Well, Bill, as we wrap up, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Well, the brand that I'm the proudest of, even though I only had a small part in, and it's just been phenomenal, was we started Bourbon Tourism, and we could never have made the brand Kentucky Bourbon Trail what it is today without the collaboration of the other wonderful Kentucky distillers. And that's the second big fun I've had, is re-engaging with all my competitors, if you please, great friends, and what a wonderful job we've been able to do together to create this interest in bourbon tourism, which is just amazing right now.
Well, that's such a, you know, I talk about that being the brand that makes you smile. That makes me smile listening to it, because I think that's another one of those kind of, I don't know if it's exactly one of the guideposts, but it seems like the rules of the game aren't usually, let's go talk with all our competitors and collaborate on something. So it's a neat win-win when your competitors all have a stake and a commitment to the region too. So that really comes together very nicely.
That's the other thing. Kentucky is just benefiting like you wouldn't believe because of this. People are, I mean, they're not just coming to the distilleries, but when they do, they're spending three or four nights, and they're all, and you'd be amazed at the amount of Mercedes and Audis and all these fancy cars driving around the courthouses of these small towns in the middle of the Bourbon Trail.
Well, I was in Louisville on business, and I didn't make it to you, but I made it to one stop along there. I made it to Evan Williams, and I have my passport, and I have it close by, so I will continue my work dutifully.
Just don't try to do it in one day now.
That's not recommended.
Attaboy.
All right, Bill. Well, where can folks go to learn more about Maker's Mark, if they want to get more on the story beyond what they're hearing here?
Well, the Maker's website.
Perfect. Well, we will link up to that in our show notes. Bill, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Well, Nick, thank you. It's great talking with you.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Bruce Kennedy gave us a shout as a branding podcast not to miss on Twitter. And Bruce, of course, was a great guest. He and Rogue Jess. So be sure to follow them. Check out what they're doing as well. And a reminder that you can find links to everything that we talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can also subscribe to the show via iTunes and Stitcher. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. And remember, On Brand is brought to you by my book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.